Chapter 29. The next morning, I'm the first to board the booster bus. I slide over to leave the aisle seat for Ron. I stare out the window, replaying every moment with Jamie. If I pretend last night was a dream, maybe Ron won't find out. Someone sits next to me. I turn to greet Ron, ready to play innocent. My stomach twists when I see it's Call Me Grant instead. "I thought you were a good girl," he says conspiratorially. "But you're a bad girl who doesn't follow rules." I didn't realize it was an either-or situation. "There are always choices one must make. I admire people who make interesting choices." He glances sideways, appraising me as if I were one of my grandmother's necklaces. "Doesn't your income as a defense attorney depend on those who make poor choices?" "Indeed, Donis Fontaine. Indeed." He rises when Ron enters the bus and begins walking toward us. "Sometimes poor and interesting go hand in hand." The closer we get to the Sioux, the heavier my heart sinks. I wish everything that happened to Robin Bailey were a bad dream that she could wake up from and have a fresh start. How could Robin get mixed up with meth? She has her act together. Had. What secrets did she have? She was a res girl. Her mom is a Noden. Stormy and Robin were distant cousins. Her dad is from another tribe. They live in the after neighborhood on the satellite res. Everyone liked her. I can't let anyone else die. I need to become a better secret squirrel, more active and less passive. Maybe I should pull on threads from Robin's life, see what unravels. My take the initiative efforts with Mike turned into a disaster. Should I try again with Stormy? He's related to Robin, Heather too. Maybe I can ask him about them. Offer to be a sympathetic listener, but not hang all over him like with Mike and have him misinterpret my attention. I won't make the same mistake twice. But first, I need to finish my mushroom research on Duck Island. Uncle David found a unique species of hallucinogenic mushroom he suspected Travis added to a batch of meth. Ron clears his throat gently and slides a folded paper into the book on my lap. I wait a few minutes before looking. The inventory of everything found with Heather Noden. Her safety pin jeans, a crop top, and hoodie. No mention of a bra, panties, or black platform flip-flops. She had a small, zippered fabric wallet with her driver's license, laminated tribal enrollment identification card, single-ribbed XL condom packet, and $174. Her Red Roots hoodie sweatshirt pocket held two resealable plastic sandwich bags. One had two joints, and the other bag contained shards of crystal meth alongside pills that were a reconstituted mix of methylene dioxymethamphetamine and sildenafil citrate. When the bus flasher begins a strip tease to Beyoncé's Naughty Girl, I take advantage of the diversion. I point to the unfolded paper, the line listing two joints. "There were six in the bag when she showed me," I murmur. The cheering grows louder. I point to the next item, the second bag in her hoodie pocket. She offered me the ecstasy boner pills. They were light with dark flecks. I share my percolating thoughts with Ron, whispering as quietly as I can. She wasn't shy about selling stuff at the bonfire. If she'd had meth on her, I'd have seen it in the bag. So she must have gotten it from someone after she talked to me. People supposedly saw her walking through paradise. My voice rises along with my excitement. Can you find out where that info came from? They might remember something, a car, or who else may have left at the same time. Whoever she had contact with may have done something to her. He raises a finger. Shh. I lower my voice again and grin. We need a secret language, like my mom and Uncle David. Holy shit. I quickly turn to look out the window so Ron won't see my expression. What if Uncle David did keep a journal, but he wanted to make sure no one else could read it? I know my uncle. My doubts when he disappeared came from observing behaviors and drawing a faulty conclusion. What I know for certain is that he collected evidence and documented everything. There has to be a last journal somewhere, and I'd bet it was written in code, in a language that only my mother and I can speak. If I can find it and prove what Uncle David tried to do, everyone will know the truth about him and why he died. They'll also know my mother's faith in her brother wasn't naive or misguided. My thoughts are racing. I haven't forgotten Jamie's views about the FBI's role and the community's role. Am I helping the FBI or am I helping my community? I had doubts from the start that it was the same thing. The more enmeshed I become, the farther apart my investigation is from theirs. It's no longer on two parallel tracks. For the rest of the bus ride, I sequence the steps I will take when I return. 1. Finish searching Duck Island. 2. Ask Mom about Uncle David's last journal, where he might have kept it separate from his other notebooks. 3. Ask Mom if Grandpa Lorenzo kept a second set of keys to his desk. 4. Watch for opportunities to reach out to Stormy about Heather and Robin. 5. Talk to people who knew Robin and try to dig for any details about what she did besides take classes at Lake State. For now, I won't mention the notebook to Ron or Jamie. Once I find what I'm looking for, I'll figure out what, if anything, I should share with them. It's early afternoon when we return to the Sioux. I race across town to catch the ferry to Sugar Island. By the time I hike to where I left off last Friday, I've got about 5 hours of light. I collect 3 samples. 2 are familiar. 1 is unlike anything I've seen before. Could it be that Duck Island saved its secrets until the end? I'm excited to get home and check my mushroom and fungi books and internet databases. It's sunny and brisk, but cools considerably once the sun nears the treetops across Duck Lake. Autumn is a fickle season. Sometimes lingering, sometimes making only a brief appearance. On the causeway, my phone vibrates repeatedly with texts and missed calls. I wait to check it until I park in line for the next ferry. Jamie. Hey, back in town. You free? Jamie. What you up to? Jamie. Is this a bad time? Jamie. Why you not respond? Jamie. Will you call so I know you're okay? Holy, he's as bad as my mother. I call. Jamie picks up before I hear a ring. I'm fine, I say as a greeting. Just finished research on the island. I told you I can't get a signal unless I'm on the north end or close to the ferry. Well, I didn't know where you were. Jamie, are you ticked off? I'm not someone who checks in with a guy. This isn't an ordinary situation, Donis. You're exploring remote parts of Sugar Island, alone, where you found a dead body. His voice softens. You promise to text me when you go off somewhere? When I don't answer immediately, he adds, for safety reasons. Okay? Okay, but you need to promise too, for safety and fairness. He laughs. Okay. Promise. I gotta go. They're waving me onto the ferry, I say. Once I park in the row, I shut off the Jeep and glance around. Robin's mom is in the passenger seat of the car next to me. We make eye contact. She gives me a teary smile. My body reacts before my brain can sequence what I should do. I exit the Jeep. Instead of rolling down her window, she gets out of the car. We hug. I am so sorry, Mrs. Bailey. Robin's mom cries as the ferry rocks from side to side on the choppy water. I don't know what I might say to comfort her, but I try. Robin helped me a few weeks ago, on campus. It was so good to see her. I hoped we'd end up in classes together. Is there anything I can do to contact her professors? Mrs. Bailey looks confused. Robin wasn't taking any classes, she says. My face must mirror hers from a moment ago. What do you mean? I just saw her taking classes at Lake State. That's not possible. Robin's been addicted to painkillers ever since she rebroke her collarbone last year. Mrs. Bailey breaks into raw, choking sobs. Then she admitted she was doing meth. Mr. Bailey gets out of the car and comes around to hold his wife as the ferry docks. We were trying to get her into rehab, not college, he tells me in a broken voice.